We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We saw the money fight coming. I don't think we saw the money fight playing out quite like this. Maybe that was naive. But a point I keep making, and it's true, these guys have been at each other's throats for a while, publicly. It's not new for Tony Clark and Rob Manfred to be going back and forth through the media, through quotes. They were doing it over issues of service time, tanking, how the smaller market teams spend their money. But the difference is now the restart of the sport hangs in the balance. And everybody's paying attention. I think you have to be a particular type of baseball fan or simply just a really hardcore baseball fan to be following every bit of that commissioner-level banter that exists normally. But this isn't some sort of new development where all of a sudden they hate each other. It's been like this for a while.
That's Evan Drellich of The Athletic. He was on with Mack and Parkins yesterday talking about the current baseball situation. And I don't want to assume facts that aren't in evidence here, but we know that when something goes away, it gives us a chance to reassess how we feel about it and maybe figure out what it means to us when we don't have it. And the old saw, absence makes the heart grow fonder. And I think that's happening a little bit with baseball, that a lot of us maybe who consume the game on a regular basis got some fatigue, perhaps got some baseball fatigue. And obviously it's colored by your individual team for which you root and how that feels. You know, we did a whole show a couple weeks ago on just how much it sucks that the White Sox weren't playing as we were building all this up. But I think it's a pretty simple question. Have you learned in its absence that baseball is more important to you than perhaps you thought? And if so, how so? As I know, Matt Spiegel has talked at length. He uses the term companion, that in a way that other sports are not, that baseball is a companion. Baseball is connective tissue in some
ways. Baseball.
Yes. And he is a proud baseball romantic in that regard. And I don't necessarily mean to take it in that direction, like, oh, the nostalgia for homespun America and the national pastime. No, I don't think you really need to go there. But there has been sort of the souring for some of us on what the game has become, and that it's been all or nothing, three true outcome, just immense power. You know, Ryan Dempster said earlier that he thinks that there's going to be a pendular swing perhaps back to guys who don't throw as hard because of the number of swings that have been geared up just to hit velocity, that maybe there's going to be some sort of, you know, dialectical synthesis of a new approach to the game that's going to need something, that kind of adjustment. And I think it'd be really cool. I think it'd be great for the game if it brought back some of the art of it in that way. Not that I'm decrying power or massive home runs or 100-mile-an-hour pitches. I mean, all that can be exciting to watch as well. But I really do miss having it there. It is the only sport of the major sports that you can just have on while you're doing other things. You could be, even if it's on the radio while you're doing yard work, if it's on TV, you can turn your back to it and you can do dishes, or you can idly help your kids with homework or something else. And it is there, and you get the feeling of when it's building up to merit some of your attention in that regard. And I miss the hell out of it. And I know when it comes back, it's going to be different. It's going to look different. It's going to be odd. But just having it there, just having Major League Baseball, having something that sounds enough like what we remember, it's going to be important. And you hope that it's a step in trying to put something back together from when you wake up and just everything in the world feels so incredibly broken. Brian in Barrington is on the score. Hello, Brian. How are you?
Hey, Dan. Always appreciate the show. Just kind of to build off those thoughts. I miss everything around the game. You know, I miss being able to go to a game with my family, just hang out and talk. I miss just texting one of my friends and being like, hey, you want to hop on the red line and just go to a game. I'm a huge White Sox fan. That being said, I thought I'd miss the actual, like, game a lot more. But I miss everything around the game. You know, I'm a teacher. I miss grading and just being able to turn on the White Sox and hear Stoney and Benetti just kind of going back and forth. And so I guess I miss everything surrounding the game, but I guess I'm not dying for the game to come back if it means families are having to be separated or players are at further risk. And I guess that's my whole issue with Manfred too. I don't think he realizes everything that's so special about the game sometimes that surrounds the game and is so focused on all the minute details, but there's something to be said for sitting outside and having a good time with family, friends, and especially at Sox games, it feels like people from all over the city. So always appreciate the show, and thanks for taking my call.
It's a good call. Thank you. I appreciate it. I don't know if Rob Manfred is a baseball fan. I mean, I don't. I genuinely don't. I don't know. And I do think it matters if the commissioner of your sport is actually also a fan. I've told the story before, and it's vivid in my memory of being on spring break senior year when my roommate and I decided, okay, we're going to go to the ACC tournament in Charlotte, and then we're going to drive down, everybody's going to meet up in Key West. And we got, like, you know, the share house there where, you know, somebody was sleeping on the floor and somebody was sleeping in the hallways and sleeping on couches, and you pay a couple of dollars and you get a roof over your head. And we were just, and so we go to the ACC tournament and we go to the first game, and it was awful. I'm like, ugh, this sucks. We could be in Key West right now. What are we doing? So we bailed, and we sold the rest of our tickets to somebody there and got in the car and just took off. And we stopped first in Vero Beach to go to Dodger Town and I got to hang out with Vin Scully and just, you know, walk around. And it was this communal, fabulous experience. And then we go to Fort Lauderdale and the Yankees spring training and saw Deion Sanders on the Braves, and it was when he was starting to play baseball. And it's 11 in the morning. We have big 16-ounce cold beers, take our shirts off, and we're lying on the concrete top of the Yankee dugout. There's only a handful of people at the game, just very sparsely attended, literally lying on there, just sunning ourselves with these cold beers at 11 in the morning. And I look up, and I'm like, is that Faye Vincent? Is that the commissioner? My roommate's squinting. He's like, yeah, I think it is. And he comes walking down a little ways, and we yell at him, like, hey, commish. And he goes, hey, what's going on, guys? And I said, I'll buy you a beer if you want to take your shirt off and hang out with us. And he gives a look, and this is so honest. He said, and I believe him. He was truthful. He looked at, he said, I can't tell you how much I would love to do that with you guys right now. He said, there's nothing I would rather do than that and take you up on that. He says, unfortunately, I've got a bunch of meetings and I can't. But I would, if you're ever out here again, I'll take you up on it. And it was just like he meant it. Like, he was in that moment, you knew that guy got it and understood it and was in some ways. And we learned that he was in some ways a steward of the game that his successors in large part were not. As we talk about your feelings about baseball, I think we're Jay's putting up a Twitter poll asking if you're missing baseball more than you expected you would. Because I think there's some people admitting, like, yeah, I was kind of over it. I got sick of it. I didn't care. It's just another thing. And now it's like, where is it? Whatever happened? John is in Kenosha. He's on the Score. Hi, John.
You know, I want to preface this. Well, I made a living selling licensed sports products. I've been to Super Bowl, Final Fours, World Series, and probably one of the few people in the world who's seen a triple header. And screw baseball.
Why?
Now, because of everything else that's going on in the world.
What does one have to do with the other?
Because this baseball really doesn't matter. When you talk about Minneapolis, you talk about COVID-19, you talk about lack of health care, you talk about what's happening in government.
Well,
baseball,
then it never mattered. Then it never mattered. Did it matter in 1968?
Yeah, well, it was a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? It wasn't as critical. It's now come to the point of people need to pay attention to what's happening around them, or they won't even be able to go to a baseball game.
Well, wait a second. My point is, there were few years as tumultuous and significant with negative news and turmoil as 1968. When you were talking about the mayhem at the conventions, assassinations, if baseball mattered then, it can matter now.
I don't know. It's getting more and more polarized to the point that there's the have and have nots. Back then, there was still a middle class, and we're rotting out the middle class, and it's getting more and more dire. So, you know, that's. You're talking half a century ago.
So you don't consume. So you're done consuming all sports.
No, I'll you know, every once in a while I'll watch it. But this is a person that, you know, used to make a point to flying out of town to go to sporting events, like Final Fours.
Okay. When exactly did you make your decision that baseball didn't matter to you?
I would say just in the last few years. I've just, you know, I...
You know, I'm saying, when specifically?
I watched the Ricketts family and the whole thing about, you know, the father really finally gave in when it was like, oh, yeah, we can make money at this. You know, that it's a business. And I watch his son, the governor in Nebraska, and I go, really? These are the people I want to indirectly or directly support? You got to be kidding me.
Okay, do you apply that same logic to your other consumer habits?
Yes. When we buy something, we're voting.
Okay, so
people need to pay attention to what they're voting on.
So when you look
at products or
well, let me ask you,
do you
look at every mutual fund you own, every single stock in which it's invested?
Now, see, here you go. Here's the argument. You go, it's the extreme. It's either all or nothing.
Don't get defensive. I'm just asking.
Well,
if you do.
You're looking to pick a fight. So yeah.
I'm trying to determine the extent of.
You can't do it at every extreme.
Okay.
You just did it with mayonnaise. How much mayonnaise are you willing to consume?
Okay, that's apples and oranges. But we appreciate the call. It's kind of all over the map there. But thank you for it. Matt in Lowell is on the Score. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Dan. Matt?
You there, Matt?
25 years ago. I was thinking about your point, and really the point that Spiegel made, how baseball is kind of your companion. And I really do miss it for that. You know, I listen to a ball headphones while I'm mowing the lawn and doing stuff around the house. There's a ball game on. My fear is, as much as I miss baseball, when it does come back, it's not going to be the same for a while. You're not going to have that ambient buzz. You know what I mean?
I do, and you're right. It's going to be odd. Yes.
I fear I'm going to miss that terribly. You know, not going to be the same. That's all.
It's going to take time for that to come back. There's no question, Matt. Thank you. And by the way, the early results of our poll, which is at Bernstein670 on Twitter, asking if you missed the game more than you thought, 56-44 is coming in the answer, yes. Tom is out on the road. He's on Sports Radio 670. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Dan. I just wanted to say I miss baseball more than I thought I would because growing up, I'm like a 5'9", 160-pound guy, and I was always kind of too small to play football and too short to play basketball. So I played baseball all my life growing up, played softball till I was 53 years old. And so it's the biggest sport that I can relate to. You know, while I love watching every sport there is, it's like baseball. I can put myself in the perspective of the players because I've played the positions and I just grew up with that, you know.
I do. That's why for a long time it's been the most human game. It's been the game that whether you're 5'8", 5'9", whether you're Jose Altuve, well, probably a bad example right now, but there that was always that you didn't have to be some sort of hulking physical freak or a pituitary case to be a reasonably successful and to aspire to be successful at that game. And I think that that's part of why for a long time the game has connected in the way that it had. I want to go back to the previous caller too to just I've got an incomplete thought that I want to complete about what he said about how I don't care about baseball because other things are going on in the world. There's always other things going on in the world. And I think that those of us who are able to have multiple channels going on in our heads and who can hold multiple thoughts in our heads, that's understood, that's assumed. Being a sports fan doesn't mean you think sports are more important than anything else. Which is why I brought up 1968, which was another infamously tumultuous, painful year at which the very fabric of our society was being torn asunder. It's not all or nothing. And if you want to enjoy sports, whether it's to get away from everything else, or you can integrate the two. Sports is politics. Sports is social injustice or injustice. There is no such thing as any actual separation of it. And I think understanding that intellectually and approaching everything, knowing that and not trying to pretend and not trying to block out and not trying to say, oh, this is just my happy time. Don't infect it with other things. Everything is everything. And you don't have to say, because there's injustice in the world or because there's pandemic in the world, therefore sports doesn't matter. Well, then it's never mattered. And that's okay. It's not a contest to see what matters more. It can all exist, and any enlightened mind can be able to coexist with all of it. I just think that there are certain times where, as a counterbalance or as part of our fabric, we learn that we miss things or something that we didn't appreciate in a way we probably should have, and that's why the majority of poll respondents now are saying that about baseball. When we come back, I want you to hear from some big picture stuff from a smart baseball guy, Josh Nelson, who was of Sox Machine and the Sox Machine podcast. He was on this station earlier this morning on the Mully and Haw show with Tom Thayer sitting in. And he talked about the Cubs and the Sox and what baseball is facing right now at the crossroads that where it currently stands. You'll hear from him coming up next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
We've been talking baseball on Sports Radio 670 The Score, expanding on something that came up with Craig Calcaterra, just talking about learning about what the game means to us, what the Major League game means to us after it goes away, and we can reassess, and we can maybe understand what it meant in a way that we didn't appreciate at the time. And we took a bunch of good calls. I want to grab one more before we hear from Josh Nelson of Sox Machine, who's really, really good. Josh from Batavia is on The Score. What's up, Josh?
Hey, how you doing, Dan?
Okay.
So, big thing. So, I coach high school baseball. I coach my little guys are 9 and 7. So, every day for me is baseball. And after the high school game is over, then I'm at my son's fields. Then I'm watching baseball at night. So, it's just the game being gone actually gives me a feeling of being incomplete. It's so much a part of this season. And then the weekends, you know, Sunday is I'm watching the Indians whenever they're playing, and then I'm finishing with Sunday night baseball. So kind of weird to admit it on the air, but without the game at every level that's been a part of my life, that's a part of this season, it's hard. So I'm hoping that these two sides can come together and figure out a way, even though it's going to look and sound different, to get baseball back.
You're clearly not a neutral party. You know, that's intense stuff when you're a coach and that's what you do. And it's in large part who you are, where your identity is wrapped up in the game. But man, I feel you about high school ball. This was, and as I told my son, who was, he's finishing up his freshman year this year, I said, at least you're not a senior. I said, you are going to, I said, you're going to pitch for Jones College Prep. It's just not going to be this year. And it was, they were so excited, and they worked so hard. You know, all the getting into shape and stretching out his arm and 3 days of tryouts and the joy of making the team and bringing home the uniform. And then it was, you grieve a lost season. I grieve those cold days sitting out there pacing around and watching him pitch and muttering about his pitch selection and what the catcher's calling and all that. And we'll never get that year back. So I feel you in that regard. I really do. I feel terrible for some of these kids, but you know what? Some of them have been more resilient than the adults.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is my level of insanity. Ever since high school, I think about, you know, Illinois springtime weather and oh, this would be a bad year for baseball. It's snowing, it's raining. And this year has been amazing. You know, no freezing outside as much as we normally do. And then these guys who are working on getting scholarships with a season that doesn't happen. You know, it's been a big deal, but that's what I think is so amazing about baseball, is how much, you know, people like you and I and so many others connect on so many levels to it.
Now, here's to the game coming back soon, because for somebody like you, I know it's more than just something you enjoy or something you use to get away from things. Appreciate the call, Josh, very much. Another smart baseball Josh was on these airwaves earlier today. His name is Josh Nelson. He runs the Sox Machine podcast, and he was very specific in articulating how he thinks baseball right now and in the foreseeable future could be in some serious trouble.
This is where I'm disappointed, Mully. So we have the draft in the next couple of weeks, and the fact that it's only five rounds is incredibly disappointing. And the fact that they did not fight harder regarding the Major League Baseball draft, because those are your future union members. And the fact that you're going to have six-round talent that used to get like $250,000 and a bonus at least can only sign for $20,000. And now you're getting wave after wave of all these minor league cuts. And sure, they were going to happen anyways after spring training and the loss of the minor league affiliates. But the Players Association doesn't protect the minor leaguers. They didn't do a very good job of protecting the Major League Baseball draft. They did not do a very good job of protecting their future. The Players Association and the Major League Baseball Commissioner's Office and owners are all focused on short term. That's all they really focus on. But they have to understand that the future of the sport is in hot water right now. College baseball is in disarray. We're going to see more colleges cut baseball from their program. We're not going to see the high school showcases this summer. If you're a 16 or 17-year-old kid and you want to be found by a Major League Baseball team or a blue blood college program, your best shot is streaming on your smartphone with a pocket radar gun, throwing a bullpen session at your nearby baseball diamond, and hoping that the pitching ninja on Twitter finds the video and tweets it out for you. Because colleges can't have coaches recruit in June and July, and Major League Baseball are furloughing their scouts for most of the teams after the Major League Baseball draft. So because the Players Association doesn't do a very good job of protecting its future, the future of baseball is pretty shaky right now. And I do think with these, you know, very talented high school kids, Molly, that play multiple sports, I think we're going to see a loss of talent in the upcoming years. And they're going to pick other sports to play. And it's going to be partly because of the conversations that are having today between the Players Association and the owners regarding as far as money. So I think you're right. I mean, nobody is looking good in this situation right now. And it's probably best for both sides to, again, I think, honor the agreement they had in March, figure out the health and safety stuff, and now try to leave the 2021 CBA negotiations for 2021.
Are the older teams at a disadvantage from this point on and maybe a year or two down the road?
They could be. You know, that's a good question. I would hate to be a 29, 30-year-old Major League Baseball player right now entering free agency next year, because you want to have a great 2020 to show that you still got it and you still have value and you are still worthy of getting a 3 to 4 year contract. But now that after you ramped up at spring training, the season shut down, we may have a second spring training. Like, in the back of your mind, if you're an older player, am I going to get hurt ramping up again? Like, how hard do I go at the second spring training to get ready for a season? And it's an 82-game season right now that's on the table. I know the Players Association pitched a 110-game season, but that won't happen. I got to do the best I can in those 82 games, trying to stay healthy. And in those 82 games, am I going to perform well enough to merit to stay with the team on a new contract or get a new contract with another team? But in this economic situation with Major League Baseball right now, I wouldn't want to be Mookie Betts. Okay. His market has incredibly shrunk, because if you have teams right now crying poor, that they don't have money, I don't see how that situation is going to change at all after the 2020 season. And there may be teams that just completely skip out on free agency altogether after this year. So for veteran players, there's just so much that's got to be on your mind. And I think a lot of them would just say, I'm just focused on getting ready for the 2020 season. But these are the things that swirl in their head about the future that they have in this sport, where for the younger guys, like, you know, Eloy Jimenez for the White Sox, for example, they're taken care of. So all they have to focus on is just getting ready for the 2020 season, and they are golden. So yeah, if you're a 29, 30-year-old Major League Baseball player right now, you got a lot on your mind.
That's Josh Nelson on with Mully and Haw with Tom Thayer sitting in today. He of the Sox Machine podcast. And the truth is that over the past few years, what we've learned about 30-year-old, 31-year-old baseball free agents, they were in trouble anyway. They were in trouble before all this was happening because of the ability of teams, this soft collusion, and the understanding of now where the value is about at what age you can still hit these incredible velocities all the pitchers are generating right now. These weren't good times for veteran free agents even before this. And I think it's important to remember that, too, that the way when you start talking about owners versus players, the clock isn't ticking for the owners. An owner can own for decades, and that asset can then just be passed along to the children and the family. There's ownership is infinite if you want it to be. And players, just now, we know the windows for peak careers are smaller than ever. The data suggests that prime is earlier, peak is shorter, and the salaries have reflected that. So when you start saying that the players, well, they should just come back, they play a kid's game. Yeah, they do. But these careers are finite, and certainly nothing's guaranteed. This segment is brought to you by Grand Appliance and TV. Grand Appliance is committed to serving Chicagoland during these unprecedented times with industry-leading delivery and in-store safety measures, Memorial Day sale pricing, and an extra 5% back on most appliance purchases. Shop grandappliance.com for offer details. Grand Appliance, trusted since 1930. We are going to play another edition of Who Am I? And this is going to be one of our special versions because it's an MLB list. And I always will put this out there to you, the texter, to do this as we go to break. And what we've done is we've taken a look at MLB's list. All of their various MLB.com beat writers have selected each franchise's best ever right-handed pitcher. So there's one here for the White Sox. There's one here for the Cubs. And then I went through the rest of the list, and I figured out how many of the other franchise all-time best right-handed pitchers have played for either the Cubs or the Sox at any point in their careers. And I say sometimes, I do my best on this, but sometimes I miss. And if I'm wrong on some of these, please feel free to point it out. I always appreciate the crowdsourced editing on some of this. But by my accounting, I have three pitchers who are the best right-handed pitcher in the history of their franchise who also pitched for the White Sox. And I have two all-time best right-handed pitchers in the history of their franchises to have pitched for the Cubs. Some of these are easy. Some of these are not. And I also want you to think, who is the White Sox representative and who is the Cubs representative? That's what we're going to play next. So get to work. That's your trivia. We'll have all the answers for you coming up in just a moment on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. Dan Bernstein asks, who am I?
Harris kind, I don't know. Brown.
Oh, he's tall.
Yeah. He's kind of tall, sort of tall. And he's, like, always wearing
T-shirts.
Yeah.
Who am I?
So he's sort of tall.
Kind of.
With hair.
Yeah.
And he wears T-shirts sometimes.
Yes.
On 670 The Score.
Today's version of Who Am I involves the MLB.com list of the best right-handed pitcher in the history of each franchise. And then we figure out how many of them, if any, are also connected to the Cubs and or White Sox. And I'm laughing as I do this because I'm reading an email from Rudy who says, I love and hate Who Am I? Because it always ends up with being, who did Kenny Williams sign after the player was legally dead? Well, it's not quite there, but there is an element of that, not only Kenny Williams at fault right here, but we've loved these lists. There's been some terrific content. So I'm going to ask first, before we get started with some of the others, can you name, and this is open to you, Jay or Ray, as the texters have been blowing this up as well. And reminder, if you are a texter, the short code doesn't work anymore. What you have to use is 312-644-6767. Lock that into your phone. That's the text line right now. That is what is now the text zone. And I know some people hear it and then they forget and they say, oh, I knew that. The text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. The text number is 312-644-6767, the very same number that you use to call. All right. Who is the best right-handed pitcher in the history of the Chicago White Sox?
I don't know that one. I would think somebody old and dead.
The answer, someone old and dead. That would be the correct answer. The White Sox best ever right-handed pitcher is Ed Walsh.
I'll take your word for it.
Yep, he's... In 1908, he won 40 games, which stands the franchise record. He made 66 appearances, had 49 starts in that series, 42 complete games, 11 shutouts. He threw 464 innings.
The last pitch, his arm hit the batter.
That is 464 innings.
Oh, like, and then 40 victories.
Yeah.
Good
then,
Lord.
Ted Lyons was second, pitched from 23 to 42. And Red Faber, third, pitched from 1914 to 1933. So the White Sox have to go pretty deep in their history, but you can give it up for Ed Walsh. Who is the Cubs' best right-handed pitcher ever?
So I thought about this. I'm going to go with Fergie Jenkins because Arrieta's tenure was not long enough. So I think I'm going to give it to Fergie.
Arrieta isn't even in the top five, believe it or not. Fergie Jenkins is indeed number one. Most pitching war in Cubs history. This is Jordan Bastian's list. Fergie Jenkins pitched from 66 to 73 and then 82 to 83. Number two, Mordecai Three Finger Brown from 04 to 12 and then 1916. He had 48 shutouts. Most shutouts in team history, the childhood farming accident that resulted in the loss of part of his right index finger and caused a bent middle finger. Oh, no, that was the result of a separate incident in his youth.
Stop having incidents.
Be better at farming. Well, actually, childhood farming, probably not the safest thing in the world, right?
I would think not.
I would think that what was your childhood like? Well, too much farming. Get all that farming in there.
Johnny Cash's brother got like sawed in half, right? For using a table saw.
He did.
And then Dewey Cox's brother got halved by a machete.
And they number three is Greg Maddux. Number four, Charlie Root, 1926 and 1941. Number five, Carlos Zambrano. And top five.
I don't know how Arrieta's not on there. That's weird.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised.
It's an oversight.
Arrieta's peak. And here is, he says, honorable mention. Honorable mention, Bill Hutchinson, Clark Griffith, Rick Sutcliffe, Jake Arrieta.
Okay.
Kerry Wood, Kyle Hendricks, Rick Rushel, 48.3 war. Rick Rushel was damn good. I know he was fat and ugly, and his brother was fatter and uglier, but it didn't matter. And he was also a really good athlete, too.
Who's my fatter, uglier brother?
Well, look, you've seen the Baseball Brothers card of Rick and Paul Rushel, where they're misnamed. I believe that they've transposed the names Rick and Paul improperly, and that's just really sad, because you don't want anybody to say you're Paul Rushel if you're not actually Paul, even if you are Paul Rushel. He probably got that. He's like, say I'm Rick. I don't want to be Paul Rushel. It's one of the more unfortunate baseball cards that you've ever really seen. I think we've tweeted it before. We've talked about it before. But look at that card. Look at Baseball Brothers, the Rushels. Those are Major League Baseball players, elite professional athletes.
Oof, that's a lot of boobs.
and Rick could hit, and he was a decent, great fielder. So his size and his build belied actually a really, really good athlete. Also gave up a massive All-Star Game home run to Bo Jackson, where he just swept it off his shoe tops and out onto a tarp somewhere. That bad things happen to that baseball. So now I've got five names of the all-time greatest right-handed starting pitchers in their franchise's history who have been either Cubs or Sox. How many can you name?
All right. Because of the Steven Souza phenomenon of last week, I now always think of the Rays first.
Mm-hmm.
James Shields.
Nice. Indeed. James Shields is the one that fits into what Rudy was saying. You just think like, well, at least they didn't give up anything to get him. Yeah, they kind of did. But James Shields is the best right-handed pitcher in the history of the Tampa Bay Rays, because those are the ones that may kind of get you here. But he's the all-time franchise leader in wins, most accomplished and durable right-handed pitcher, 7 years with the team. Started 30 or more in six consecutive seasons, finished third in AL Cy Young race in 2011 through a team record 19 complete games. James, big game James Shields. One name has already been mentioned.
Yeah, I was going to say, did they say Maddux? And it has to be Greg Maddux.
Greg Maddux is the best right-handed pitcher in the history of the Atlanta Braves. He's one of two pitchers ever to win four straight Cy Young Awards. He won the first with the Cubs, captured the next three with Atlanta. His ERA of 1.90, his ERA plus of 2.19. It's one of the best single stretches in baseball history. An 11-season stint with the Braves produced a 2.90 ERA from 96 to 2003 that ranked fourth among all big league pitchers. So, I would tell you, we have two more all-time greats on this list. One not so great, and one all-time great who was just at the very tail end of his career and finished with a Chicago team at the bitter end.
All right. I have one more guess. I'm going to say Tom Seaver.
Nicely
done. White Sox legend, Tom Seaver.
Yes. White Sox legend Tom Seaver is the best right-handed starter in the history of the Mets. He pitched there from 67 to 77 and then came back in 1983. He is their all-time leader in wins, ERA, strikeouts, complete games, shutouts, and wins above replacement. A near unanimous first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the greatest pitchers to ever play the game. And the bulk of his contributions indeed came as a Met. So Tom Seaver is there as well. We have one, I will tell you, is an all-time great Hall of Famer who finished his career with the Cubs. I had to look that up, and I didn't know that he did. And the other one pitched relatively recently for the White Sox.
Ah. Recently for the White Sox, right?
Relatively recently, yes. I will tell you, the all-time great that I did not know is the Phillies Titan Robin Roberts pitched in 1966 for the Cubs. Roberts was sometimes forgotten in an era of some great pitchers. Warren Spahn, Early Wynn, Don Newcomb, Whitey Ford, Bob Lemon. He won 199 games in the 50s, second to Spahn's 202, led the league in strikeouts, complete games, and innings pitched during the decade. He was a legit great. And I did not know until I looked up that he finished his career with the Cubs. So that leaves us with one name, and he is the best start. I will tell you, he's the best starting pitcher in the history of a National League West franchise.
Okay.
He ranks first in their history with 1,348 strikeouts. He spent 8 seasons in this city. He was one of the best pitchers in the game. 2 strikeout titles, 2 ERA titles. He won the 2007 NL Cy Young Award.
Jake Peavy.
You got it. Yes. Jake Peavy, who came to the White Sox and didn't have a whole lot left. And then he tore his latissimus dorsi muscle and was the first baseball player ever to have that reattachment surgery that had only been done before in tennis players. And he came back and was bad and loud and talkative. But that's it. James Shields, Greg Maddux, Tom Seaver, Robin Roberts, and Jake Peavy are those who have had Chicago connections.
All right. I did better than I thought I would.
Yeah, I'm kind of impressed with you. And I already know for sure there's one. When they do the lefty list next week, there's one that stands out that I already know. I'm not going to say the name. But when it's going to get really good, and this is going to be a much longer segment, when we start talking about, like, great closers, because there has been the number of closers, first of all, that change teams, and the number who have come through this town. There have been so many other teams' great closers for a time who've come to Chicago to die. Who've come here with absolutely nothing left to try to just to salvage whatever. And I'm not even including Shingo Takatsu and his, what was his, the frisbee ball or whatever they called it, that we'd throw and then somebody would hit it 100 miles an hour over his head.
Yes. Look how slow it is. Oh, now it's fast.
I just imparted energy into the frisbee ball. But truth be told, Shingo Takatsu was the closer of an eventual World Series champion. We can make fun of him all we want. But that was that's part of the trivia question sometime when you say who were the three closers on the 2005 White Sox, and they were Shingo Takatsu, Dustin Hermanson, and his magic Ponzi scheme acai juice. One of the weirdest interviews I ever did on the score, by the way. And then Bobby Jenks, who took over for Hermanson when he had his lower back instability. Do you remember that interview by any chance?
I do a little bit. Now that you mentioned it, I do. Like, it had disappeared from my memory, but now that you mention it, I do remember it a little bit. Yeah,
it was.
It's
so
nothing like the weirdest one you ever did was the John Madden, and who was the Vikings player with Anthony... the horrible phone delay.
Yeah, Anthony something. I forgot his right. That was a technological issue. This was Dustin Hermanson on a phone at a park, and all he was trying to do was pitch people on this Ponzi scheme to try to sell acai juice. And like every question, he's like, yeah, that's great. Anyway, what you have to do is go to this website and sign up, and you could be a licensed dealer of this special magic juice that cures all ills. I'm like, oh man, okay, we gotta bail out of this.
That was when we also had Drew Rosenhaus on, and all he did was talk about the Burger King, his new client.
Well, that's when, at the Super Bowl, he sat down with the Burger King, and the Burger King gave me the finger. Because I kept saying he was creepy, and he was flipping me off with both hands. I believe that's the only, well, maybe not. Is that the only fast food mascot that's ever given me the double bird? Maybe the
to your face, anyway.
Ones. Yeah, behind
I think
my
Ronald
back.
McDonald gave the deeply Chicago accented Ronald McDonald flipped you off at Bears camp once.
that horrible, horrible Mayor McCheese. He and I have beef going way back.
Oh, boy. All right, let's end the show.
Yeah, thank you. With that, thank you to Ryan Dempster, Craig Calcaterra, Hub Arkish, Brad Pitt, Antoine Fats Domino, for joining us today. Can you tell it's Friday? And I'm on fumes. Jay Zawoski, our executive producer. Ray Diaz, the man on the board doing what he does. We're going to have a whole bunch of fun stuff on Monday with all kinds of things happening in sports over the weekend, right? Right? Things that happen? Things to talk about? Wash your hands. Wear your mask. Wear it over your nose. Because that's the point. You breathe through your nose. You got to have the mask over the nose. Otherwise, it's just a mouth covering, and it's not a mask. Stay as far apart from people as you should. Do your best to do that. And be nice to people. Try to empathize with people. Understand that not everybody has had the same world experiences or life experiences that you've had. And maybe try to see things through their eyes. It helps in all regards whenever you can try to do something like that. And remember to try to do it, because it does take some effort. Listen to doctors, and only listen to people who listen to doctors. Lawrence Holmes is coming up. He's got Scott Miller of Bleacher Report, who is scheduled to join him today. So listen in. I'll be back 9 o'clock on Monday. Have a wonderful, safe, healthy weekend.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.